Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Peace, family, is 19 Keys with the 19 Keys podcast. You're listening to a high-level conversation. Tap in. All right, a word from one of our sponsors. Make sure you tap into Goldwater Products. After you come listen to the information, you're going to need your memory stimulated so you can download everything in that prefrontal cortex. You want to make sure that hippocampus area of your brain that regulates mood, memory, and learning is fully functional and tapped in. Therefore, you want to tap into Goldwater. They have Smart Moss, Sports Moss, Vitamin C Moss, Colloidal Silver. They have just about everything that you, your child, and your whole entire family needs to stimulate your brain and your body and to make sure that your immune system is functioning. Before you tap into this great high-level conversation, listen to this song by Tezu Kulando called Goldwater. Peace, family. Welcome back to 19 Keys Podcast, 19 Keys of Electrical Thought Patterns and Conversations. Today, our podcast takes us to Oakland, California, where I sat down for an interview with Trap Art. We covered everything from Kaepernick, Superman, masculinity, Harriet Tubman, Tyler Perry Studios, 2020 year of the ownership, sex trafficking. We got into a lot of it and also a little social media. So I want y'all to tap in and enjoy this. And as always, make sure you leave a comment, a message, go on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever, leave a 5-star review. And also, if you'd like to sponsor this podcast, just tap in. Peace.
This is Trap Talk on Trap Art TV.
What's up, everybody? You tuned in to yet another episode of Trap Talk, the podcast. My name is Bia Mechie, and as always, we got Tattoo Panda in the
building. Yes, sir.
And before we get to introducing our feature for this morning, I want to mention that the last podcast, I didn't bring it up, but we have a lot of interns, people supporting Trap Art in various ways. So I just want to shout them out because they do a lot of work behind the scenes that people don't necessarily see, but yeah, are a big part of making the events a success and everything we do a success. So big shout out to all the interns. And if you want to get involved, make sure you follow us at TrapX Art. Send us a message so we can figure all that out. But big shout out to Brittany and big shout out to Deja, who's in the building. You know what I'm saying? So big shout out to her. But before we get to all that, I want to make sure we give a proper introduction to our guest, somebody who really needs no introduction. If you follow Trap Art and if you follow what we've been doing on over the past few years, we feature none other than the world changer, the world renowned, traveling, conscious mind, all that, man, paradigm shifter. We talking about none other than 19 Keys. Give it up.
Good to be here, my man.
For the people who don't know, man, like what exactly do you do? It's funny because like our intern DJ, I was talking to her before the podcast, and I was, you know, telling her who you were, yeah, and it was hard for me to introduce you properly. You know, it's hard for me to explain exactly what you do. So how would you introduce yourself?
I go by 19 Keys, and that's 19 Keys of Enlightening Thought Patterns. What I do is I'm a global thought leader, you know, and I consider myself a world changer. We may all live on the same planet, but we live in different worlds, and our worlds are made up of our perceptions, thought processes, views, consciousness, ideologies, philosophies, whatever that may be. And so my goal is to increase the pattern of thinking so everybody can get to a higher level of consciousness and enlightenment. And so my goal is to travel around the world, you know, enlightening the entire diaspora to get on one world view.
That's what it's all about. That's admirable. Yes, and usually, I should mention as well, usually we are with our co-host, Kalgani. She cannot be in attendance for this
podcast.
Shout
out to her right now.
Yeah, shout out to
she
her.
She don't get no shout out for missing this.
Nah. She got reasons. She has her reasons. So we're not going to get into that. But big shout out to her. But let's usually, like, when we start off the podcast, she kind of leads, you know, icebreakers. We have some questions to just get to know each other better, things like that. Obviously, I already know you. But I will start off with some light questions. Let's just call it that. I'm not going to call it icebreakers, but let's call it light questions. All right, so what I first wanted you to talk about is...
What's going on?
I wanted you to talk... What's going on? I wanted you to talk about Twitter, Instagram, some of the craziest things that you've seen. I mean, I'm talking about, like, people stalking you. I'm talking about people misquoting you. What's going down in the comment section. All that, man. Craziest stories.
And you know what's funny? Somebody said something today. It was a brother that commented on a post. I had a young, rich black guy on there. And maybe this is funny to me for particular reasons, but he was like, if you go had a black on there, you got to do it with a capital B. Now I look at his AV, and he has a very capital W white wife. And I'm like, how he go talk to me about black power, man, black consciousness? You know what I'm talking about? And he's in an interracial situation. Now, I just found it funny because I would think of all people, you know what I mean? He would have let that pass. You know what I'm saying? And I just find, like, people on the internet somehow become revolutionary in their comments, but not in their lives. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, I've definitely have stalkers, and I've had stalkers, and I'm hopefully that my stalker retired. unsolicited pictures, videos, comments, and imaginary relationships, you know, that I've never actually been in, that people participate in their own head. Instagram is, and social media can be a place of very non-critical thinking, where people take information with not having all of the sides. And, you know, you blast an opinion out. I know everybody's been guilty of not having all the information and participating their thoughts into something. But, you know, it's just one of those places where, I don't know. I don't think people realize that, like, it's only real to a certain extent. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not really tough because you can talk shit in a comment, because if somebody see you in real life, then you have to back that up with physical action. You know what I mean? You're not really revolutionary because you post something that's revolutionary. You have to back that up with a lifestyle. You know?
I'm getting deep in here.
Man, for real, though. You know what I'm talking about?
Getting deep.
But, I don't know, man. I just don't like when people's comments, profiles don't match who they are in real life. Everything comes around full circle.
It's funny, because you actually, like, do a lot of entertaining of, like, what people say. Like, you know, you go back and forth. I usually, like, when you go through, like, some of your posts, you always, you know, responding.
Yeah, I got a little time.
Responding. Yeah, you got some time, right? But it reminds me of, you know, when Brother Ben had the, he came out with that song called The K. You know,
yeah,
hit you
with
the
K.
Yeah, you know, just when somebody say something crazy, just respond, K. You know, what's your mindset when you responding to people, man?
It depends. A lot of times, to be honest, I be lighthearted with it. I just find it. I got a very interesting sense of humor. You know what I mean? So, like, a person could say something stupid, and I just be like, shut up. Because I know in their head, once they read this, they're going to be like, they really is telling me to shut up with a period, though.
Yeah, that period, that energy.
And that's when I just see something that just don't make sense. Like,
You obviously coming from a very ignorant standpoint. Not only that, you follow me already, so why would you follow somebody you disagree with only to comment in the times that you disagree, but then not post in the times that you are in agreement? And it's something that just sounds stupid, and I just say, shut up.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, hate is a new love, like that old Wale CD. It's like people, you know, have more energy towards the things that they dislike and that they're not, you know, passionate about or don't resonate with than they do about the things that they so-called support, you know? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I mean, you said a lot about, you know, that with Trump. Like, you know, a lot of people talk about all, you know, Trump this, Trump that, and they put more energy on that than supporting, you know, people that they say that they support.
It was a famous meme. I don't even know if it was real, but this Indian guy was on there. He said, "What is your secret to longevity and long life?" And he says, "I don't argue with fools." And the guy was like, "Man, I don't know if that's real." And he was like, "Yes, you're right." And the whole point was, he not about to argue
with
this. And so if you ever see me comment, "Yes, you are right," that's just me not arguing with a fool, not that they actually right.
It kind of reminds me of a wise comment that you were once said, which is a very wise comment about the way to get to a billionaire is to drink water.
Water to your billionaire.
You know, that was somebody quoted me on a tweet today. I don't know when I said it. I got to have context, right? Because I put out a lot of content. But context matters of what I was saying at the time and what that conversation was surrounded by. You know, I think it was more so about affording liabilities probably or something in that matter. But yeah, man, drink water till you become a billionaire, whatever that means to you.
Or gold water, you know what I'm saying?
Drink gold water till you become a billionaire, man.
I want you to just real quickly before we get into the questions that we want to talk about for this episode, just catch people up on what you're doing right now in terms of this four corner tour. And I know you just got back from South Africa. You say a few words about that, and then in 2 days you're going to Jamaica. You know what I'm saying? So hitting on all those different corners, just talk about it.
It's the global diaspora tour, you know, obtaining a global perspective on the Black and African diaspora as far as our consciousness worldwide. You know, we started off here in the United States with the Shifters. We traveled all throughout the U.S. doing events, shifting the mindset and the paradigm of our people. And then we went out to the U.K., which really gave me a different perspective, being my first time traveling outside the country. Yeah. We had the ability to throw an event. We went to Parliament and spoke with the Queen of Diambia and had representatives from all corners of the diaspora, from the Caribbeans, from UK, from the United States, and then from Africa. And then from there, I went to Africa and South Africa, which I was able to have conversation with former UN members and African Union members and also the millennial generation of Africans and people on the street. I really take a, what they call a ethnography, you know, where you really steep yourself into the culture of the people. That's my way of observing, right? So I don't travel as a tourist anywhere, you know what I mean? I travel and become a part of the landscape. Like,
part of the culture.
Yeah, take me to the hood. You know what I'm talking about? Like, let me travel as the people here on the ground travel in their transportation systems. I don't want to do all of the tourist guided things. That's not going to give me what it means to live here, what it means to be here and to see it. So when I travel like that, it changes me who I am, and it allows me to connect different pieces, for one, of how Black people globally think, and it gives you a global perspective on the solutions that are necessary for us to improve our conditions on a global scale, you know. And so the next is the Caribbeans, you know, going to the Caribbeans and seeing what I can learn out there and find these missing pieces. And that's why I deemed 2020 year of ownership. That's what came to me. Like, this year was 2019 year of the keys. You know what I mean? Year of the keys, obviously, it's the 19. A lot of things happened, and it was allowing me to grow and grab the keys necessary in order to unlock the doors. And next year is the full fruition of the vision, getting directly into ownership. You know what I mean? I want land and knowledge yourself, man. You know what I'm talking about? Ownership. Like, I don't want to beg for nothing. I don't want no jobs. I don't want nothing. I want to own it. I want the title to it. You know what I mean? I want the keys to it, the deeds, you know what I mean? The LLCs, the patents, the trademarks, you know what I mean? Nothing but ownership, because when we own it, we can control it. And once we control it, we got the power and we can say what's valuable or not, you know what I mean? Because if this land over here we don't own, but this land we do own, then we just get everybody going on this land. It becomes the most valuable. And we can make each other billionaires and millionaires overnight just by saying, you know what, only support what we own. So we have full vertical integration, you know what I mean, on wealth.
Yeah, I think that everybody who travels could take that in, though, because, like, you know, if you go somewhere, people usually go to the tour guides, but it's like you can just find somebody, like, take them out to dinner, right. You know, get a sense of, like, you know, what that culture, wherever you're at, like, is like, who that person is like, what mm-hmm. they, you know, just have a whole, I feel like that's the best way to do it, just tap into a specific person that you may, you know, gain a relationship with and have them really walk you through, mm-hmm. like, their experience instead of, like, you know, going to what the tour guide says or do these 10 things when you're in this right. place.
And the tour guide sometimes be trying to scare you so that they can keep tourism right. going. Mm-hmm. Like, they take, don't yeah. go to this party. You right. need somebody. You don't be needing all of that half the time. They told me to not go to a bunch of different places. I go to them anyway. That's the only way you're going to be able to see them. Right. You know what I mean?
What's the most craziest spot you've been to where you felt like, all right, maybe I shouldn't have came here? No,
I mean, shit, a bunch of different spots in Africa, to be yeah. honest. You know what I mean? Because you look around and all of these young boys, they hungry. You know what right, I mean? Right. They skinny, they need some food to eat, and they probably got knives and guns on them ready to rob some.
I was seeing somewhere out there where, like, they stay in, like, the cemetery and shit like that in some parts of Africa. That, man.
That's the and part of the tour, wild, guy. You should yeah. listen. Don't go there. whoa.
That's what I'm saying.
Niggas is hanging out in the cemetery? Wild, like. No, I'm not messing with no vampires. You know what I'm talking about? They in the cemetery. Them brothers is dead. I'm
it's
cool.
It's rugged out there.
And you ready? You ready to same, die? You go
they going
the
through a lot of the same stuff we going through, but yeah. just different levels. You know
the
I mean?
Hood around the world is
right.
the same.
It's the same.
You know what was out there? I was interesting that, you know, we do a lot of senseless violence out here, mm-hmm. right? So we'd kill you for no reason out here. You can look at a person wrong, stare at somebody, girl, bump a person in the shoulder. You feel me? Or bang at colors, or different neighborhoods, whatever it may be. Out there, at least they killed because it was poverty-based and they was trying to gain something from mm-hmm. you. You know what I mean? Like, they trying to rob you and take your stuff. They said most of the time somebody getting killed is because somebody put a hit on you on something serious, but yeah. they not just trying to kill you because you a black man.
Right.
So when I was explaining to them the senseless violence that we have, they couldn't understand that. Like, I'm like, you know, out in areas where they gang bang and murder you for a color and then not even take none of your property. They couldn't understand no idea like that. Like, nah, we would take your property and leave your life. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I felt a little more, I rationalized things in a different way. You know what I mean? I grew up militant, soldier in the hood, blah, 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 blah. So I'm thinking, shit, they do more robbing than stealing. So most of the thing I'll lose is my material possessions instead of my life. I feel it's more dangerous living in L.A. than it would be in the third world part of South Africa. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So I wasn't really tripping. I felt comfortable.
Yeah, that's interesting. It is a lot of senseless. I was just with a friend at church the other day. I was with a friend who was telling me about her experiences in Tennessee, and she was talking about Memphis and how out there there's an epidemic of, like, people just getting shot on the freeway. Like, there's, like, a lot of freeway shootings for people getting, you know, cut over and stuff like that, driving and whatnot, just road rage type of situations. Like, it's a lot of people. Like, it happens time and time again, and it's just like, damn, that's crazy. I couldn't even imagine. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's wild, and it
they
doesn't
do
even
that
go
shit
that
in
way.
St. Louis. I mean, like,
and a lot of those are, like, gun states too. Yeah. So it's quick to grab a gun when you got one right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's gun. It's like you said, the gun manufacturers, like, they're not out here, you know, right. So it's like, that's...
Oh, shit, a lot of them cats be getting it off the black market, though. They get mm-hmm. it. I know in St. Louis, they rob the trains. You know what I mean? So they get them off the trains. Somebody got crate loads of it. Then they sell it to the guys in the hood. So they got caters, choppers, mm-hmm. many, all kind of different weapons. You know what I mean? And then once them hit the streets, they just get high off drugs, ain't got nothing else to do. They can't go to certain areas because they told them that certain areas is off limits, so the cops will come around you. So now they can't go and have regular fun. So now they in the hood just trying to think of some shit to terrorize people to get a reputation.
Anger.
You know what I'm talking about? So you go out there, you look at somebody, girl, he pull a chop on you on the freeway.
Cut him off.
Damn.
And the systematic institution of the reason why things are this way is why Kaepernick was kneeling. So I want to transition to talk about Kaepernick. For the people who don't know, he had basically a private workout that the NFL had scheduled for him this past Saturday. And just a quick one-on-one on the situation, Kaepernick kneeling for the national anthem. Go ahead.
I was going to say, did they schedule that?
Well, the NFL scheduled it.
Oh, He did.
The NFL scheduled it. So the NFL scheduled a private workout that was going to be at one of the team's facilities in Atlanta, the Atlanta Falcons. It was going to be in their facility, but it had certain stipulations. And the basically, it seemed like Kaepernick wasn't okay with those stipulations. Mm-hmm. So last minute, he changed the location. He made it accessible to his media, his people, the public. And he had, like, media there where he did, like, a little he gave like a little speech after, but he didn't take questions and answers, though. It wasn't like a Q&A, like, you know, media asking them things like that. So anyways, it wasn't like an official. It's a lot of ambiguity when it comes to like the details of like, were there NFL scouts there, who was there, who wasn't, all those sort of things. But you know, he had some comments talking about the NFL was scared, Roger Goodell was scared, he's still waiting for his opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. I have my thoughts as a diehard Niners fan, like, and this whole process I've had thoughts about it because, you know, it's a national topic and there's a lot of opinions that come in. And having actually seen Kaepernick in his last season and how he played and all those sort of things and how the whole thing transpired, I have my opinions, but I want to first get to you. What's your initial thoughts on all that? Do you have any opinions on what he said, how he's perceived, and really like the reaction from everybody around the situation?
You know, I want to salute Kaepernick for one, taking a stance when he didn't have to. He could have just continued to play. And he could have played out his season and let that be. But for whatever reason, something was on his heart and his mind and his spirit that said, I want to take an action, right? And sometimes that happens when people feel like the only thing that they can do is this one thing. You know what I mean? And that one thing changed the world. You know what I mean? In a sense to where it affected millions of people. And it created social justice causes.
Yep.
It gave money to organizations.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it created conversation around systematic injustices and social injustices that weren't being had in certain spaces. And it brought a lot of awareness to people who get to live in their privilege without having to think about these things.
Yep.
You know, and it brought a lot of hypocrisy to, you know, the national anthem and so many different conversations to where basically everybody who somebody had to speak on this. So it brought the national attention that he wanted to do so. Salute on his success and his kneel.
Real quick before you go any further, like, yeah, that's a good point because it's like even when he started doing this, like, I didn't even know the origin or anything about the national anthem. Who does? You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't even pay attention to these things. Who wrote the song? What was the context of it? All these sort of things. And it's like when you delve into that, it's like, things get interesting. You know what I'm saying? So I think you're right on that. He was a huge success in bringing attention to even questioning these things. But go ahead.
So after you step into the role that I'm sure he couldn't have foreseen the reality that was going to take place afterwards, he's put into this position now as a revolutionary, as a political figure, as the people's champ. You know what I mean?
That's a good way to put it.
And when you think about it, kind of like what Muhammad Ali did when they said he was practicing sedition by dodging the war in the draft because he said that it went against his religious practices. And so he was willing to go to jail, and he went to jail for what he believed in. And when you think about the ultimate level of sacrifice, a person willing to give up their freedom for what they believe in, that's a very powerful thing, especially when you're at the top and the height of your career, and you're the greatest in the world. Like, Ali was the greatest in the world.
The greatest.
You know what I mean? So that was a level of sacrifice and integrity that every person, not even just athlete, but every person should take in their life. Because if we all had that level of integrity, we would find things changing in a mass scale. So when you see Kaepernick taking such position after footsteps like that of other sports heroes have done, there's a thing that comes, I think, to mind to where you see how the NFL treated you, right? You know, a lot of people go to the harsh scale of calling the NFL like a plantation. You know what I mean? Based on the owners being 100% white. You know what I'm saying? And the way that they treat the players when the players should have all of the power in the first place because they don't want to make the NFL go around. They the ones who get the concussions. They the ones who get all of the issues after they done playing and they can be discarded away when they're no longer useful. You know? And they got to shut up and play. That's basically the NFL's unofficial decree is shut up and play, you know, and he didn't shut up and play. And so once you get into a position where they treat you like you're discardable, if I'm working a job I don't care if it was my dream job to work at Apple, mm-hmm. and I became high up, and I've studied, you know, engineering and tech and coding, whatever it was, and then I'm working there, and I do something and say, wait a minute, y'all algorithm is biased against black people, and I'm going to take a stand against this. We need to do something. And they like, nah, shut up and code. Get out. You know what I mean? This is no longer my dream to work for these people. You know what I mean? I don't want to work with somebody else and enhance their organization that I know is inherently biased and discriminatory against me. So now it has to shift my energy towards this organization to where, no, you know what? I'd rather champion for the people and take this legacy that I've started now in this inherent responsibility and say that I don't even want to work for y'all no more. Matter of fact, I'm vehemently not only against just the coding aspect, but the ethics on how this whole thing is being ran from a vertical standpoint. So I believe that the legendary aspect and the most powerful aspect, if Kaepernick would have took that stance and saying that we need to take a look at the culture of the NFL, the ethics of the NFL, the hierarchy of the NFL, on how we have all these white owners being able to capitalize off all this black energy and talent, and we have no say-so about when we want to speak on things that affect us, even though we make the organization what it is. So the fact that he took whatever the deal he had, and it was non-disclosed that he had with the NFL, settlement mm-hmm. with the NFL, we don't know what that actually was. Right. So the people are left with a blind eye to even know what agreements were being ran at that time, why things couldn't be said, how much money he settled for, whatever. But I imagine that once you settle, he won. Like, he got the Nike contract, he got the social justice, he got a settlement. I mean, he might be a little greedy. You know what I mean? I'ma just be honest. I ain't never seen nobody win that many times. You know what I mean? And be on the side of right. You know what I mean? He might be a little greedy to say that not only I want all this, I want to go play again as well. Fuck the NFL is my stance.
But he was down a long time, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, what, 3 years?
Yeah, that's
3 years.
A long time for...
I would say he shouldn't go back and beg for a job.
But that's his passion, besides anything else, like being what everybody wants him to be. Football is his passion.
That's
so
where sacrifice comes in, man. That's what makes you a legend, when you're willing to sacrifice that thing you love the most to do the right thing.
So you think he's going to be a legend as a revolutionary or a
player? He already is. He was never going to be a legend as a player.
But see, if he get in, he probably could be because
I think he brought up a good point about Ali. Ali was at the prime. Kaepernick, he's had great moments. I'm a diehard. I was defending Cap when he, like, you know what I'm saying? He had great moments, but he was at the end. No, I'm not going to say the end, but he was declining. He got benched for a terrible player the year that he went out. He became vegan and was losing. Nothing against vegan. I'm vegan. But he lost a lot of weight, wasn't as athletic. His whole game was predicated off of athleticism. He wasn't as athletic. He was getting hurt. All those sort of things when you come to the actual game. Like, he wasn't – the NFL is a huge – they're known for letting players in, whether it's domestic violence, whether it's, you know, all these off-the-field issues, if you can play. If you can produce at an elite level. And if Kaepernick was playing at the time that he started kneeling and whatnot at an elite level, this wouldn't have transpired this way. It wouldn't have transpired this way. Because it's like the NFL, is if you're a player, the NFL and sports in general, you could say, and even you could translate this to even outside of sports to a certain extent, if you're somebody who's a valued employee or somebody who's doing something at an elite level, there's a lot more leeway. There's a lot more. You can kind of change how things are going around. You can make these demands and do all this. But if you're a player who's just going to be a backup position role, right, and you're coming in, it's already week 11 in the season. It's not even feasible for him to come in not playing 3 years, be on a team, and what, he's going to start starting for a team, learn to play? Like, you're going to be on the bench.
Right.
So it's like you're going to bring all this media, all this attention, all this thing, and you're not even performing at an elite level. They're not going to – they don't want you to say, oh, we're going to change the workout here and do this and do that. You can't make those demands if you're not an elite player. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't mean to cut you off, though.
No, I mean, you make valid points. He's one player that wants to change the entire NFL, which is a structure that's been set up. And he has changed the NFL.
Yes.
Like, he's changed it forever since. But, I mean, he did complete his dream of playing in the NFL.
So, yeah, I see what you mean now. So he will probably have a better chance at changing football on the sidelines and not on the field.
Yeah, and going into other.
You're right.
All of this influence he got, he can leverage to do anything he wants at this
coaching
point.
Anything, yeah.
I think perhaps he needs to be surrounded by the right people that can tell him some moves he can be now making, that where he was able to leverage his initial dream to turn into something even bigger than he could imagine.
Maybe he feel like he dug himself too far in the ditch by not working.
And this is what we doing. This is what we doing a lot of. Maybe he feels this. Maybe he feels that. Yeah. We don't know because he hasn't really said much. This whole 3-year period, it's been a commercial. It's been like maybe a few tweets on free. But he hasn't really,
he wants to play ball though.
I don't know about obviously. To me, it's obvious that he doesn't want to play ball with his actions. I feel like this is a cat and mouse game, a PR thing of like, if you really wanted to play, you're going to pull up and talk about the NFL is running from us. The owners are running from us. I'm here. I've been waiting. That's not a way you would kind of talk to something that you want to be a part of. From my vantage point, that's not going to help you get back in the league if that's what your goal was. And I feel like even the NFL on their end, like any player, if you're a free agent and you're not signed to a contract on a team, if a team wants you, they bring you in. They bring you in, you do a workout. That's what happens.
The fact that they had
like a public, like we're gonna bring in 26 teams and see you at this workout, to me that alone was like already giving you the sign that like we're working together to make this a situation where teams can not feel the pressure of like if something goes wrong on the media side of them bringing you in, this is a safe place for you to come and show your talent. That's not really what they wanted to do though, because if a team wanted him, they would have already had him try out.
Know what you could do.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, another component is the Jay-Z aspect of being involved in it. And you know, his girl, Nitty, Ness Nitty?
Nessa
Nitty, isn't it?
I think it's Nessa.
Okay. I'm calling Sister Nitty. Sister Nitty.
Shout out to Dope Visions.
She spoke against Jay-Z during the time.
She spoke against a lot of people.
You know, the partnership with the NFL, and they've said that Jay-Z had something to do with the NFL creating these workout tryouts. Mm-hmm. You have to understand things at a different level once you made your billion. You know what I mean? Jay-Z and Diddy made their billion. And I don't think it's about money for him. I think that we get into a point in our culture to where we demonize the very people who may be making strategic efforts and moves on a part to make some type of progress.
Off of something basic or getting caught in the semantics.
Yeah, and sometimes we need to stop being so critical of each other and let things play out and see what it's going to be, because if we scrutinize every move that's being made while it's being made, we never get to see the bigger picture coming to fruition. And that happens on so many different levels and so many different scales. And once you become, I think, a global thinker and you start to see things from a higher perspective, you understand why the person at the bottom can't understand why you're making moves at the top. One can say it's black capitalism, to where you don't want to change the structure of capitalism. You only want the power to be able to control more of the structure and continue to keep it going. But at the same time, that's my pops outside. At the same time, I think that we got a responsibility to each other, you know, to not be so critical of each other in public and learn how to have these sort of conversations in private so that we can make real change and have an agenda. Because everybody else ain't having their conversations in public about things they're going to be doing to us.
I think that's true, and I think that's good to circle about the bigger picture of this topic, you know, because even when you look at, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, there doesn't really seem to be a specific thing that we're looking to accomplish now. You know, like, I think him kneeling, like you already said, was a success. Mm-hmm. There's still people kneeling in the NFL to this day. You know what I'm saying? People are still doing that. Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about your whole thing about kneeling was bringing attention, you've brought attention. You know, sometimes it's been distracted by what the, you know, bigger issue is and whatnot. But you brought attention. Do you want to sit down?
Yeah, Pops, you want to come in?
Does he want to come in? You've been asking him if he wants to come in. It's fine. You can take a seat. But yeah, we got the Pops in the building, which we're going to get to in a little bit. You did a little interview with your Pops earlier this week with us, which was great. But yeah, just close the situation out. To me, my whole thing has been this whole, his agenda has been, I don't know what his agenda is. There's a lot of speculating right. from the outside of what exactly do you want to get accomplished. Like, we see the commercials. We see Nessa, you know, shooting down Jay-Z, shooting down the NFL owners, shooting down this, shooting down that. It's like, what exactly is the goal? You know what I'm saying? And I think it's one of those things from the Kaepernick's camp and his side. It doesn't seem genuine to me that he wants to be in the NFL. It seems like he wants to control a narrative and continue being, like you said, the people's champ. Right. You know, he even said, quit running from the people. But the thing is, though, people are behind Cap. It's not like people aren't behind him.
Everybody's behind him.
Everybody's behind Cap. Just, you know what I'm saying?
What does he want to do?
Exactly. What does he want to do? I feel like he doesn't. You know, and to Jabril's, to 19 Keys' point, you know, it's like, why would you want to play? Why would you want to be employed by somebody that you seem to be so against? Like, why do you want to be a part of it? And I think from the NFL side, it's like, why do you want him a part of it? Like, if you're saying, like, you're afraid of the PR hits and you don't think it's that good, why even have a workout that's, like, you know, hosted in front of all these teams and act like there's an actual fair chance of him getting in? Like, it's all PR game on both sides. Well, what I see.
Controversy. You know?
Yeah, I don't see the point in it at this point. I think, like I said, 2020 year ownership, man, get our own.
League,
it's ownership or slave ship. That's it, ownership or slave ship. Which one you want to get on?
Man, talking about slave ship, talking about sex trafficking, it's been an epidemic of that with black women gone missing and things of that nature. I know you've been pretty vocal this trip that you've been here. I've been tapping in with you. You've been talking about wanting to do some, you know, video projects, some film projects geared towards that. I just wanted you to open up and say what's on your mind when it comes to all that.
I mean, you know, there's 77,000 missing black women, you know, in America. And I'm sure that number is steadily increasing and on the rise. And, you know, it's always been said that black women are the most unprotected women on the planet Earth. And, you know, that is a large responsibility of the black man to protect the black woman. And we live in a society that demasculates and has an emasculating agenda towards masculinity, you know. And the problem with it is that you have to understand that we also have a culture that celebrates sex trafficking, that celebrates pimping, that celebrates those direct things. We have the soundtrack to sex trafficking is hip hop. You know what I mean? What do you think that, who you think they listening to? You know what I mean? But then you have to recognize that these brothers grabbing these sisters, these devils, you know what I mean? The black devils, a lot of them. You know what I mean? And they're being used as instruments and tools against each other. But then at the same time, why are people so comfortable with their ability to do harm to black women and there's no retribution or vengeance being done upon them? You know, and that's because there's been a separation from black men and black women. There's been a separation from divine feminine and divine masculine. So these issues stem all the way down. But we have, you know, they had the whole Me Too movement that kind of opened up the rape culture. You know, this particular sex trafficking thing, I mean, this is something that women and men all around the world, they fight. But it's great that it's being brought into a light because it breaks down the root of the issues, right? So I talked about how I always grew up in a time where we taught my sisters that at certain times at night that you don't travel. Mm-hmm. And if you are traveling, travel with a man or travel in pairs. You know what I mean? If you go travel with a man, travel with a man that's willing to protect you and die for you. You know, and for one, a many man that is willing to protect and die for you has to be a masculine man. For one, he has to have the ability to protect himself and he has to have the confidence to relinquish that ability to protect someone else. You know, that's a divine decree that every masculine man has, wanting power. The problem is that most men are feminine in the sense that they're not in touch with their masculine side. So we have a lot of toxic femininity that exists within a man and where they can't relinquish that. And now you have hip-hop culture celebrating, you know, sex worker and sex trafficking. Essentially, because that's all it talks about. You know what I mean? It's sex, sex, sex. And then on the other side is death, death, death. So we have sex and death culture. And that's what funds sex trafficking. You have organ harvesting and a bunch of other different things that go along and coincide with that. But I think, for one, every person needs to educate themselves, for one, on what it is, and need to educate themselves on security tactics that they can take. We have a society, I mean, we have what, Uber, that allows you to get in cars with strangers that you don't know. You know what I mean? And ain't no telling how many people have been missing from these particular things. Like, when black women go missing, is it plastered everywhere? You know what I mean? And there's a divide on even when black men get killed from the police and black women get killed from the police. So we have a responsibility to protect the mothers of our culture, the mothers of our civilization. And I think that the only way that's going to happen is two things. Is that the celebration of what it means to be a black masculine man that comes along with that characteristics of being a protector has to be celebrated and pushed out. That has to be the new narrative. Yeah, I mean, because as long as men want to be niggas, a nigga ain't talking about how he go protect black queens and stuff like that. Him talking about, but women love a nigga. They love a thug that ain't gonna say shit about protecting you in situations that arise and taking to the streets when there are issues and educating himself to make sure that he stands on the right side of the issues. That's not gonna happen. And then at the same time, a woman that moves in her divinity knows how to secure herself to make sure she's not putting herself in situations unnecessarily. You know what I mean? To where, you know, you got a lot of predators out here and you don't want to make yourself prey in a sense to where you're asking for, not even asking for, but you're putting an energy to where you letting them know that, look, I'm independent. You know what I mean? Come grab me. You know what I mean? The independent woman and the interdependent man are both tools of white supremacy, because the dependent man, you know what I mean, is one who no one can depend on. And the independent woman has no one to depend on. You understand me? So that's the first disconnect right there that says, oh, she's by herself. That's what an independent woman says. And any woman that's by herself can be snatched up real quick. But if that woman is backed by her brothers, cousins, community, you know what I mean, an army, you ain't touching that woman, because what's going to come back from that is a backlash to where everybody in your family get murdered. Mm. And that's what has to be said. Like, you found out anybody name attached to something, it got to be an eye for an eye. You know what I mean? Ain't no Christian, we forgive you type shit. It got to be on some, you got to be willing to shed blood, because there's 77,000 missing black women. You got to count that as 77,000 murders, and somebody got to be willing to murder those who murder us.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point you made about preach, the point you made about you know, hip hop culture kind of like being the soundtrack for this culture is very interesting. And you know, you put hip hop culture in a big umbrella term where there's, you know, a bunch of different, there's artists, you know, doing things, but for the most part, mainstream hip hop culture. We know what it is. And it's one of those things where it's like, we consciously, like, so much comes from that culture. You know, it's you talking about earlier with the whole Kaepernick situation, sacrifices, things that you're even passionate about. That's what real sacrifice is. You let it go for a greater good. And it's one of those things where, like, I myself, there are times where I have to cleanse myself of, like, you know, even listening to certain music. I'll just listen to jazz for, like, you know, 2 weeks. Or I'll listen, you know, go on these different trips and vibes where I'm doing things outside of, like, mainstream hip-hop, because a lot of it is negativity, you know? It's just consistently putting these things in your subconscious that you don't even think about. We were, like, here the other day when you were, like, kept rhyming words to a song that you didn't even like. And you just kept doing it, because it's, like, it's just it being your subconscious. It's a program. You know, and I think, like, yeah, it's like you got to reprogram yourself with something that could actually be positive for you. But having said that, it's like even with this podcast, I feel like we have interviewed, you know, young rappers, and, you know, we're going to continue to interview young rappers and things of that nature, because we know how big of a influence they are in our culture. And it's like, I feel like to completely shun or to turn your back on, you know, like, the culture, it's kind of hard to do that if you want to effectively reach people and show, you know, people different perspectives and venues, because we all come from that culture, you know what I'm saying? So it's like such a polarizing thing for me to talk about specifically with hip-hop and, like, the negativity in it, because it's like we're still in it. It's one of those things where it's like, if you watch Martin, like, you laugh, you have a good time, you laugh and all that. You watch Martin with a white person, you feel uncomfortable if that person laughs. It's like, you're not supposed to laugh at this, you know what I'm saying?
Laugh at your own pain. You don't want nobody else laughing.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
laughter of your own pain is part of the healing process a lot of time. But somebody else laughing at your pain can re-trigger that. You know what I mean? And open up wounds. So now you don't want to sit there with somebody who is a participant and who has a level of privilege, you know what I mean, in those wounds. It's like, if you laughing at a situation, a relationship you had with an ex, you know what I mean, that was a terrible fucking relationship, but in hindsight, you can kind of laugh at some of the things that was happening, and that's your way of healing. But if that ex is next to you laughing at that shit, what the fuck are you laughing at? You the one causing this shit.
It sounds like a real example for you.
That's, huh? Nah, not for me. I ain't never been hurt. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm saying? I'm keep my
credit. But no, or it's like if you got a concert, like this day and age, you know, like you look at the sales of these mainstream rap artists, you look at the concerts and stuff, everybody in there is white. You know what I'm saying? Like you go to a concert, yeah. It's going to be all white. And it's like, it. You know, the certain, you know, when you reciting these lyrics of certain songs and you know what words are in them and whatnot, and it's like, you just look around. Like
that's an interesting observation, the fact that they are some of the biggest concert goers. You know what I mean?
They and know supporters how to turn that switch off, yeah. though. That's the cool part about that.
So they don't?
They do.
Oh, yeah.
Is that they know, like, we hear music, I'll say, like, and we believe that shit and we want to live it. Like, they hear it and they'll be like, oh, that's fucking crazy. Right.
Cause it's then they go back to their regular life. It's more of their entertainment.
And that's why I say it's crazy how serious we've starting to take hip hop into where now it's like, like how you talking about the sex trafficking, like, oh, it's just normal. Why? Because we hear it all day.
Right.
So it's like, that shit's kind of like a filter on us. Like,
I mean, we in Oakland, land of pimping. Look at Too Short.
Right.
You know what I mean? Too Short been the most notorious pimp for the last goddamn 20, 30 years.
But now it's different, though. It seems like that's one of the main options for these young girls to kick it off as, to right. start at.
On hoeing, stripping, or shit.
Scamming. It ain't no more like before, it's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get a job. Ain't none of that. I'm about to go to the fuck.
Right.
What?
She go fuck a nigga for $1.
Yeah, you feel me? And yeah, it's just like music has kind of babied us into everything being okay. When, like I said, like when the white people go to the concerts and shit like that, they look at it, they like it, but they know how to turn that switch off.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scandalous how we being programmed to not turn that switch off. You feel me?
So you saying it doesn't become their culture.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But it becomes our reality for right. sure. Because even like rappers, though, like how you said, we talk to rappers and some of them don't really live like that.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of them. Maybe so having a like, wife and kids.
It's hard to make the soundtrack to your real life. Why are you living it?
And that's what we was just talking on. And it's just crazy. I'm just sitting here just thinking about it like that.
And it's like it's entertainment, but it's culture. And it's like, you know, all these things mixed in one. And that's when you get into this, you know, weird game of like, okay, like, yeah, it's entertainment, but
when is it going
to
change?
Okay, so you got to look at, it's entertainment, but it's programming.
Right.
Right? So it's subconscious programming that comes with a responsibility. So as an entertainer, you can entertain with somebody with some things that's good for him. You look at Dave Chappelle, the way he entertains. He entertains with truth. He entertains with perspective and opinions on real things that open your mind up to view society in a particular way. And hip-hop was once a control entertainment industry from 5% nations, from the gods of the earth. It was a time where if you look at the language of hip-hop, you know, they would use God a lot more than they use the word nigga, right? And then through the shifts out the years, like after Biggie and Pac died, it shifted over from more so kind of like Islamic-based, 5%er base, and it shifted over to more of like a nigga Christian, you know what I mean? Sex, money. Death culture, money, hoes, bitches ain't shit, you know what I mean, type of reality. And nobody wants to go back into the legends and be like, you know what? We listened to y'all shit, but y'all shit was fucking terrible for us, to be honest. Y'all raised us on some bullshit because y'all was raised on some bullshit. And a lot of those legends are living and nobody want to pull their card and make them renege a lot of the shit that they put out there.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about? So it's like there's a responsibility because across the entire planet, if I don't care where you go to, black people are listening to hip-hop. You know what I mean? They listening to grime. They listening to house. Which means that's the only universal tool for communication that all black people have as a programming tool that can get everybody on the same accord and frequency. Hip-hop. So hip-hop comes with a responsibility whether you want to be a role model or not. Once you step into that role, people model themselves after you. You understand me? So you just want to, you can be an irresponsible role model. You just have to take that card. Don't say I don't want to be a role model. No, I just want to be an irresponsible role model. I want to do my shit, have my fun. You know what I mean? Talk about drugs. Niggas be talking, 50 Cent talk about drugs and shit in the club. He was sober as hell. Getting everybody to pop X in the club.
Exactly.
You know how many people took that as a real soundtrack for them to go do their drugs in the club? And he wasn't even doing that. He's sober as hell, counting up the money. So it's like hip-hop has always been... A lot of entertainers have been the most irresponsible role models ever for the black community. Because we don't get a chance to step out of that world.
Right.
We make it our world and it curates our world. You somebody rich that listen to music about poverty, you stepping into somebody's world, but you're not living in it.
Right.
We allow that to create the culture for us.
Yeah, and we've been, the entertainers and athletes have been elevated so much, man. It's like they're in the black community, they're elevated so high. And it's strategic, it's institutionalized, but it's like anytime something happens, you got to get the perspectives of, you know, any who say this famous rapper, this famous athlete, why? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's people, the CEO of Kaiser just passed away 2 weeks ago or a weekend ago, right after Afrotech. I mean, it's, you know, a black man CEO of a major company. You know, it's like there's people, and there's, I know there's few and far between, but like, those are the people, you know, it's like you got to elevate other people
that's
as well.
That comes from black media, though.
Black media. It's like we were talking about earlier.
That's where ownership comes. If you don't own the media, then you can't own what you propagate as important.
Black media, music, the entertainment, everything. That, all those aspects. Like
2020-year ownership.
Yeah, ownership. About Tyler Perry in the studio.
I don't know too much about it other than there's a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of opportunities. What are you laughing about?
What you got to say?
It's two folds to that though.
Blue Pill was talking about
that. There's a level of accomplishment that has to be looked at as a success. Like, that's what's up. We need that. You like the role, I wouldn't.
That's what, I just jumped on that because we're saying like owning the entertainment. Yeah, and
it's important.
Probably the only being that we know that's black and that could do that.
You know, so. They said parts of Black Panther was shot there. You know, and
that
at Tyler Perry Studios specifically. And it's important that we have to own the studios because right now there's nothing but Jewish owned studios, right? And we don't control any of the entertainment that's being propagated towards us. So I will salute him 100% on that component because the same way Kanye West is owning 40,000 acres or whatever on land, you might not like the aspects of Tyler Perry dressing up like a bitch or Kanye West trumping for that bitch. But the aspect of him moving like a god and the acquisition of land and the acquisition of property that can have control in media. And I say bitch just to show the polarization of the intensity of feelings that go along with that. It's important that you able to, you know, as we say, eat the meat, spit out the bones. Or as a vegetarian or vegan would say, eat the fruit, spit out the seeds. You got to settle on the best part of a person. That's the responsibility of critical thinkers that we have because oftentimes we throw everything out when it's like, all right, that part is over with. Now look how much good can come from this.
Right.
And white America has been able to create these sacrifices to where they build off blood, they build off drugs, they build off death, and they get to flourish and live. So it's like you got to be able to settle on the best part of our people. We live in conditions to where we have to do things as unsavory to our taste buds. Right. But once these things are done, we got to be like, you know what? That is the example we should be setting, though. Like Kanye West and owning land, I don't care how much you want to talk shit about Kanye. If you go talk shit about him, also mention a part where the land aspect of what he's talking about is 100% needed as far as ownership.
I think that goes back to what you were saying, like critiquing people, critiquing our own people too much. Being too hard on our own people without being like giving acknowledgement of what we're doing good. Though.
We just got to be critical thinkers.
Yeah, and look at the long view. And I think also it resonates, we talk about the entertainment companies and ownership. 2020 ownership of that. I think it also gets back to something you posted about your social media, which is the Harriet Tubman movie. You know, produced by. There's a lot of details with that in terms of how that's produced. But let me just say this real quick. There's a lot of details about the tree of how that was produced and who's in ownership of that, and like, do you really want to support that with a white man having control of like that story and that narrative? And you could also look at like the show Watchmen, which is really popular right now, also made by a team of white people. They have a lot of black writers and things like that, so I don't want to like discredit those people. But you know, at the person at the top who's making the executive decisions with these things, it's white people talking about black stories and black history.
White people capitalizing off black.
Capitalizing. Let me say that. Capitalizing off black stories. And to me, I guess like before I let you go on that, because you did post about it. You know, I think a lot of times we have the conversation of I'm not gonna why are white people telling the story? Why are white people telling the story of slavery? Or what's the motive and the motivation behind that? My opinion is like, the focus should be on let's get more black people who are in those positions to tell stories ourselves. I don't care. If a white person wants to tell that story, they can tell the story. Like, that's their prerogative. They can tell everything else. Why not? Just go ahead and tell a story on slavery or on, you know, historical accuracies that have happened in this country as it relates to black people. But I think we need to have more options where black people have ownership in general. Like, and we don't, it doesn't have to be just stories about black people or about like a specific, you know, talking about slavery or X, Y, and Z. We just need to have our own companies set up, our own media companies, our own, all different across the board ownership where we can tell our own stories and have that option. And there's multiple ways to get it. So you're not just getting it from one source, which is what we've had to do in this country for so long. But let me hear your thoughts on that though.
You got to look at it from a global perspective, and then you got to look at it from an agenda perspective. Mm. If you watch the movie Harriet Tubman,
do you see it?
No, I haven't.
What kind?
If you a young girl and a young woman that watched that movie, I can see you being awe inspired by the story. And I've read, like, ever since I was younger, we watched all the documentaries and got all the information. Yeah, I mean, on Harriet Tubman, like, we had to learn all of that in class consistently. Mm-hmm. Every year we had to watch those damn documentaries, and I got tired of them. You know what I'm saying? But we had to learn those stories as a practice when we were younger to educate ourselves on our history. I never needed a white person to tell me a story about black people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because that's our responsibility to teach our children. So even if you watch those movies and they have historical inaccuracies, they have the true knowledge to say, wait a minute, when I watched the history that was presented by my people, I didn't read that part in the story. So they would know the truth so they can, like you say, eat the meat and spit out the bones. But right now,
They take it as gospel if they don't know.
You take it as gospel. So the danger in this is that we have a movement of women's liberation and women's rights. So anything that's pertaining to women will be celebrated by all people, right? There's a danger in the process and the agenda when you think about emasculation and you think about toxic masculinity. And when you see one time you celebrating the women, but then you're positioning the light of the black man, you know what I mean, in a toxic sense, that's raising the girls but downing the boys. You know what I mean? So yes, everybody he talking about, I can take my daughter to see it. Well, it's supposed to be movies where you can take your son and daughter to see it.
Right.
Because raising one without the other creates the imbalance to where you have the same issues that we dealing with today. Right. So it's like they can hide behind good, right? And they can put in falsehoods and evils. You know what I mean? And this plays into the larger agenda. This is only one movie, but a movie is more than thousands of speeches.
Right.
Now, when you think about it in this same context, that if a white girl goes to see Terminator, it's going to do the same thing as when a black girl goes to see Harriet Tubman. You understand me? Because she go watch Terminator and see a white girl as a superhero. You know what I mean? Not only a young white girl, she gonna see an old woman being a badass, murdering shit, all kind of crazy. It's gonna have the same confident building things for both sides. The only difference is one is fiction, one is inaccurate facts. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. But one is steeped into our epigenetics, our DNA, because it stems from actual history. So one is really triggering. Mm-hmm. The other one is just real badass confidence building. They got a million movies about them being superheroes. You know how many movies there are all about white women doing impossible shit that white women can't do? You know what I'm saying?
A lot.
It's way too many. You know what I'm saying? And it does the same thing. So we don't need a slave movie to inspire our young girls.
Right.
You understand me? I would rather them watch a movie of a young black girl flying around doing something. That's going to give them an imagination of possibility. You understand me? So it's like, sometimes we overpraise these things as if they're the saviors for our people, and it's not. Their media is their true source of inspiration. For white men, when you think about when they talk about white patriarchy, when they see Superman, he's the ultimate figure of white patriarchy. Doing some shit he could never do in real life. He could never sit in the sun and get power. You know what I mean? He sit in the sun, he go get cancer. You know what I'm talking about? He got a goddamn black man named Kal-El that came from a different planet. Mm. But when he come over here, all of a sudden, he get melanated powers, you know what I mean? Because he's sitting in the sun and it activates some energy to where he can fly around the world and say that if you're a young white child watching that your whole entire life, all comic books are based on your greatness, it's feeding into your psyche, your supremacy on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
We have the our responsibility and the ownership of media is not just to be the shooters and directors. We got to be the script writers.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Tell the story.
We have to be in these positions to where we can create the foundation. You know what I mean? It's like if the brother made, Tyler Perry made the studios, we need a lot more black writers that can tell more stories in imaginative ways. Because our history don't start from slavery, and that's the problem. We keep starting our history at 400 years ago. And you go to South Africa, they telling you stories about things we did 100,000 years ago. So it's like we need those stories. And what that does is it rebuilds our DNA. Because they say epigenetics. It stays in generational curses, basically stay within the DNA for 15 generations.
Right.
So we got things that stem it back 15 generations within us that we constantly triggered by. So of course they're going to show us the worst thing that they done to us over and over and over, so it can constantly trigger that which is inside us. But we got to build and we got to activate our DNA in a way where you can rewrite that shit so we can actually do better. You know what I'm saying? We don't need constant re-triggering. We need an old new reactivating and a new writing and a new coding of our DNA that exists. Right. And that recoding can be done through the programming of media, through music, entertainment, politics, events, you're right, education, so many different things. You know what I mean? So we have to take ownership of the stories. And we don't have to, and like I said I was boycotting. I can boycott anything that I don't feel like falls into the complete agenda of our people. And if you're going to show that, you got a responsibility to not only show it, but to give the critical thinking aspect to say, you know, that black man in the story wasn't real, right? You got to tell your daughters that shit. Yeah. But if you will go there and say, daughter, how you loved that movie, didn't you? But you ain't going to tell her the truth about aspects of the movie that weren't wrong. That's not real, because when she grows up, it's feeding more into this feminine aspect of misandry and her hatred of black men.
Her being strong.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And the narrative of black men being toxic masculine. When she was younger, she watched a movie on how black men was goddamn, you know what I mean, played a role in Harriet Tubman, her greatest superhero now. You know what I mean? An evil delishment role in the white master had to kill the black man because he wanted to kill Harriet Moore or some shit like that. But it's like, it's dangerous when you allow any aspect of their narrative to be played. And you allow our children to take it wholly. And so they take that agenda and it allows them to continue to perpetuate their propaganda.
Yeah, media is powerful. The media is powerful. So like ownership is key, like you said. And on the conversation, the transition of, you know, toxic masculinity, specifically toxic black masculinity, I know you had strong opinions about the Pharrell cover that said, like, was it a new masculinity? Was that what it said?
New masculinity? Yeah, the new masculinity.
I forget what magazine that was, but y'all know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And it's interesting with Pharrell, because I was having a conversation with my boy Josh the other day, and he was saying something that's really interesting, talking about, you know, the hyphy movement when we were, you know, growing up, when we were younger, and how, you know, just the images of, at least for a black man, the images of, you know, things were crazy back then. It was dangerous. I mean, it's still dangerous now, but it's different, you know, especially when you incorporate the gentrification, how just Oakland has changed so much specifically. Like, it's very different. And it's like back when we were growing up in the hyphy movement, things were just dangerous. And that was a time where you were expected to be, like, you know, you expected to be hard. That was like the image. You got to be hard. You got to be tough. You got to be street no matter where you're from. Like, that's what the music, we talked about the hip hop earlier and how it influences the culture and how we think about ourselves. That's what the soundtrack was. You know, 50 Cent, you mentioned earlier, like, you know, Get Rich or Die Trying. That was like the image of masculinity and of ourselves. And then you kind of transition to this period where, kind of like more so when I was in college, where Pharrell was getting really popular and like had a different effect on our culture. It was like, it's okay to not be, you know what I'm saying, talking about guns all the time and things like that in the music. And I think that was a really powerful thing at the time. And it really did a lot of positive things for people to say, you know what, I don't need to be, like, my image doesn't have to resonate with this street person who I'm not. You know what I'm saying? And I think, like, that was very powerful. Fast forward to now, we have another, I guess, big moment for Pharrell or somebody like him in this current landscape of culture with the magazine cover where he's, what was he doing, wearing a dress or something like that?
Yeah, it was like a pyramid-shaped dressed. It was terrible.
Cover? Chanel?
It was terrible.
What happened? Well, let me take a pause real quick. Get some chips? Something? I think I got to handle something real quick.
No, it's a lot to unpack with that, you know. And my comments that I've been giving, it was for GQ.
GQ magazine.
So my comments that I've been giving on that is, for one, I'm sure that there was probably LGBT members who dressed him up for that shoot, which is ironic, the fact that they're the one who creating the propaganda for new masculinity. And that's important to note, especially when he's supposed to be a heterosexual black man. How can you allow someone who is not from the same, I'll just say culture as you, you know what I mean, to prop you up, you know what I mean, as a puppet for their agenda. And that's exactly what he was. But
I mean, you say it's supposed to be, but I mean,
yeah, you know, I mean, it's two separate polarizing agendas and cultures that comes from. And so when you talk about masculinity, right? Me and my pops was talking about this yesterday, and we were talking about how masculinity is, for one, based in power. You understand me? But also it's based in characteristics of what it means to be a man. That's what masculinity is, the typical characteristics of a man, right? And so when you think about that aspect of it, how can a person create a gender-fluid image and say this is a new masculinity when these are not the typical characteristics of a man? So when you want to talk about masculinity in the sense to where you're going to say this is the new something, then you should be creating something that's better or improving upon, and which means that you should have it backed by substance to say that, you know what, the new masculinity is loyalty, honor, integrity, respect, protection, you know, producing, creativity, you know, being honorable, you know, like these are things that you should have as like substance things, because man is mind. So you should tell a person how they can build their mind up to become a better man. Instead, they're saying that if you put on a dress and you become gender fluid, then this is the new masculinity. The
acceptable man.
Exactly.
But I will say this though. Has anybody, because I mean, I definitely didn't read the article. I didn't really know about it other than from what you said.
Right.
Do you know like what the article was actually about?
The article, was the cover. Here's the thing about it is the article don't matter because it's the cover image that's viral that becomes the most important, because they know people are not going to read the articles. So you build and you design it with an intentionality. No,
it's
true.
It's like any paper. People exactly. Who write the stories don't necessarily
the
write
picture
the,
tells a thousand words. Right. So whatever the article was,
it shows
it don't
no
matter.
Masculinity at all.
None
even
at
to
all.
Wear how he's holding his hands, to look on his face, to the colors that they use for the yellow and like turquoise.
Yeah.
And I mean, it,
so there's a rewriting.
Even the writing, like the bold GQ is hidden in the background with this funny writing that says the new masculinity issue. You know what I mean?
You know what's
it's just all for the eye.
Most people in society today, the one who curates, like, toxic masculinity is a term that came from homosexual white man and another heterosexual white man. And we got to stop allowing them to condition our culture with their beliefs. You know what I mean? And how they view, for one, gender. A lot of times, the way gender is viewed is through a white woman's viewpoint and what she thinks. And then that's being thrown into our culture. But if we don't know how our ancestors viewed it and how our ancestors played it out, you know what I mean? Then we are detaching ourselves from our own culture and from the rest of the diaspora. Because when you travel around the world, it's not how Africans view masculinity. It's not how the people in the UK view it, not how the people in the Caribbeans view it. So how come the American viewpoint of these things are so different? And that's because our consciousness is so intersected with everybody else's thinking. We're totally disconnected from the nature of our ancestors and how they would have viewed it. You understand me? And the reasons that they even done things. Like if there was, I went to the Zulu village. And they would wear small cloths and things of that nature, but they were warriors. They had a different spirit.
Say, but they don't have
that
thought in their head.
Nah.
Like, you know, when you taint something, they're not tainted by that thought.
It's completely different.
You feel me? It's their warriors in their mind. Well, not in their mind, in actuality, because that's what they are.
Yeah, so it's like we got to go back. For one, we have to deconstruct all of the things that's here in order to be able to accept the infrastructure of our own nature. Like, you can't honor your ancestors with living, you know, through somebody else's thought process.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because then they won't even be able to connect with you at all. So it's like masculinity has to get back to its original definition. Because the problem is not the fact that men are too masculine. It's the fact that men are not masculine enough. You know what I mean? And that's really the thought process. And when anybody go talk about masculinity, put substance and characteristics of honor and power behind it. You know what I mean? So that it conditions the young men to become something better, not to just become anything. Because that's shape-shifting, man, instead of paradigm shifting.
Those them words have nothing to do with the look either.
Nah, nothing.
Nothing you know to mean, do with the look. But nowadays, it is everything to do with the look. How right. they changed it. Like, it's crazy. Right,
and I think that's probably what their intention was. Yeah. With the article or with the cover to, like you mentioned, all the intersectionality differences and all the different things, whereas other places around the world they don't have all that we have here in America. But I think that's the reason why an article like that or a cover like that gets talked about so much and whatnot, because you're gonna have people who are saying, I disagree with this definition, I resonate with this, why do you disagree, all these different groups having that conversation, getting virality and making it get popular. And that's why they put it as a cover. That's what a headline is. Like you said earlier, the people who, I haven't read the article, and like you said, to a certain extent the article doesn't matter, because the headline or the image, the cover, that's really what the topic's going to be about. That's people don't read. We in that Instagram, culture where it's like, even when you look at things on Instagram, it's a lot of misinformation and things like this, but at the end of the day, what is the images that we see? And that's what we're going to talk about. I actually wanted to use that to transition to the situation, talking about social media and whatnot, with the whole Rodney Reed situation with the man who is going to be set to be executed in Texas. And to my knowledge, at least from what I follow on Instagram, Sean King was the main person who was kind of spearheading getting people information, the general public, about what the situation was. Then Dr. Phil had a series on the story, I believe. And then there was a petition about signing your name to this will basically give the people at the powers that be in Texas the ability to kind of maybe halt the execution, at least for when that was set, and which did happen. So I wanted to get your thought on that in terms of the social media aspect, in terms of being centered around a movement and having the community behind you and backing it. But then I also wanted you to say a few words about the Amanda Seales situation. I showed you before we got on this podcast how she was commenting. It seemed to be very much directed towards Sean King or other people who were propagating that petition for people to sign. And she basically took exception because she felt like all the information wasn't provided, because there's other cases that he was associated to in terms of his DNA being in certain other rape cases and things like that she didn't know of. And there was just some misinformation she felt, and she went to Instagram, I believe, to express her concerns with people like Sean King. She didn't mention Sean King, I don't think, specifically, but people like him who are getting a movement around something and taking advantage of him, almost made it seem like she was saying, of people who just want to do good, who just want to do right, and who can get behind a movement, but don't get all the information about it.
Sean King is... he's a leader in a lot of social justice causes today, and he's become very big because of his involvement in letting the people know about a lot of the egregious injustices that's happening in America that we would never know about. You're talking about brothers. He had one case where a brother was locked up and he had a bail for 20 years or something ridiculous that nobody just knew about who he was, and he's just been sitting there just locked up for no reason. And it's like, you got somebody like that brings cases and has been fighting for the last 20 years. And it's like, at a time where he had, I'm sure, no media and no celebrity presence, and there was no awards for it. I believe that, I don't know the brother, I've never met him, but anybody that dedicates their life to assisting other people that everybody else forgot about, you know how many black men and women has locked up in jail today that nobody knows anything about? I say, for one, you have to commend and award that before, you try to tear into a person's character and reputation. There's things that in his politics that I might not agree with, and things that he says that I don't agree with. But when you think about the 0.1% of people who dedicate their lives to things like that, you got to respect it, First, you got to put respect on the name, and then you go into the details. So from what I've read and the little information that I've got, and the danger about all of this is not knowing the full picture and you only being able to go off the information that's being presented. And taking the information as being truth.
Especially when it's very complicated matters that involves a lot of, you know, studying up on, reading up on. Right. That's one of the troubles of social media.
So there's this.
You get your information that way.
You got a black man who's accused of a sexual assault, right?
Right.
Of a woman. And so then you have, you know, our people, for one, black men, I don't know if it was a white woman or black, I don't know.
I think it was a white woman.
It was a white woman, right. So black men in this country have been accused, you know, of doing things to white women that we haven't done for years. White women have been a secret weapon.
Since Emmett Till.
And they've been like this. They've painted their white women as this thing that black men just wanted. It's like we just had to have that. They have this innocent purity of whiteness that every black man just wants. And that when we touch it, we muddy them up. And they've utilized that against us for decades and decades and decades and decades. And so we know that there's today, I'm sure thousands of black men who have been accused of raping white women that are completely innocent and raping women, period. The black man is demonized in a sense to where he's not seen as a human being, to where nobody really cares. Especially, it's one of the most dangerous things, being accused of any type of sexual assault, right? Because there's a level of guilt that's already associated based on the triggering of how, you know, crazy that these crimes are. So to go to bat for any black man that has been accused of rape, and this Innocence Project that they said been looking at this for the last 18 to 20 years, they said, you think that we really got it wrong for the last 20 years? You think that the Parole Board of Texas really would have had a stay of execution? It wasn't really just based off social media. It was based off the fact that they've been looking at the case, and based on the evidence that's being presented, they was able to make their deliberation in this way of stay of execution. But there's been multitude of cases, and they don't just do this just out of nowhere. And not just because it's an Instagram post. So, and not just for the petitions or even the phone calls. There has to be legitimacy back behind it. Mm-hmm. And so, when you listen to Amanda Seales, you can fall into it to be like, damn, that's fucked up. You know what I mean? I don't like Sean King because I wish he would have told me more.
And not just Amanda Seales. King,
It's
the posts that she was referencing to, all the things that she saw on social media that were like, you know, that he...
But she had inaccuracies, and even in her post. She said that there was a woman killed that wasn't killed. You know what I mean? She said that there was a rape and a murder that happened, and this woman is still alive and well today. So it's like, even in her virality and what she gave in discussion, people ran with that, right? So I haven't seen her post where she came back and cleared up those inaccuracies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the same thing that you're telling people to be careful of, you're creating that same narrative. So it's like I've seen Sean King do a lot more good than I've seen him do bad. So I'm not going to say, you know what, we should now question this brother's character, somebody who's been fighting for our people for, I'm sure a very, very long time. I don't know all of the consistencies of the case. You know what I mean? I don't see why a person would make up an agenda to get a black man out of nowhere that nobody knew about, you know what I mean, off of death row, and who was about to get executed when he was guilty of previous crimes.
And like you mentioned, there's institutions like the Innocence Project behind him, which, like you said, they don't, you know, they get cases all the time that they don't take. They don't take the majority of things that come.
You're trusting them.
Right, right. And that's what he was emphasizing. But I think, like, to your point about her, Amanda Seales, who is somebody that I don't agree with a lot of the time, but I know that she's an influential woman in our community. Like, I know a lot of people that look up to her very heavily, and I think, like, that's why she, you know, what she says is, like, you know, it's like even people say it's dangerous, like when somebody says something or puts somebody in a rabbit hole, like, because she has an influence. You know,
I'm not particular for her. I didn't like her remarks against Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Did you specifically see her remarks when she had the whole situation with the former NFL player who she was accusing, or she had people that around him, she said, basically accused him of sexual assault, where there was no evidence of such thing? Are you familiar with that whole situation?
I heard a little bit about it.
The only reason I bring up that specific situation, because it's similar to this, and that, like, you know, there wasn't any, like, factual evidence based on what she had found out, but she posted it to the rest of the world. And, you know, like, he has to deal with that, you know? So,
I mean, that's that misandry of feminism that's intersected to where it becomes a little dangerous, to where you go at bat and you want to villainize all men in a sense.
I don't mean to cut you off. I wish Cal Gowney was here on this episode, man, because I feel like, man, it's just to balance out the energy. I don't know how this is going to look. We out here talking about this. I would love to give her the opportunity to give her opinions on all this, but she ain't here today. You know, she's just rocking us three. But
We don't keep it moving like that. I mean, I would just say that everybody, regardless of who you are, regardless of who you listen to, whether it's influences, whether it's things you don't like, you have to do research. And, you know, research is different between just reading something and taking it verbatim. You have to dive into it if you really want to have a critical discussion and make a decision from an informed viewpoint. And social media doesn't always present you everything. It presents you the things needed to make decisions, you know what I mean, and lead you to the goal that this person wants to get you to, whether it's Sean King, whether it's Amanda Seals, whether it's myself, whether it's any influencer, thought leader, you're right, any discussion being had, I think we got to not be so lazy as a people. If you want to be on the side to where you can be happy with the decisions you make, otherwise you have to trust the leadership that's giving it to you and say, you know what, I trust your quality of truth that you present. Because people are only trying to present you enough so you can make the right decision.
Right.
So, you know, I think that that's really the moral of the story here is do your own research. You know what I mean? But you have to be careful from the perspectives that you get because they can be biased. So you really, when you trust somebody like Sean King, you're trusting the fact that even when you go do research, you may get biased media. But these person, you talking about have 20,000 papers that they may have went through different documentations and you trust a decision that they made even though you may not be able to understand why.
Yeah, it's a lot of information out there. Like, see, I feel like something relevant, I know you don't vote, but something relevant is like, you know, the election, you know.
Local elections.
Or even local elections. There's a lot of candidates that people don't know about. And so how do you go through that when there's so much information? And I've always felt like, and this is something I practice, I take people that I, you know, opinions that I respect from as diverse of a pool as I can find. So if you're talking about, like, let's just say the presidential election, right? So you take somebody who you know is going to vote Democrat and has a track record of that and who's educated and studied up on exactly what each candidate's doing and whatnot. Somebody whose opinion you respect, you talk to them about who they're voting for and why and really getting down the details of, like, key policies and those sort of things. Then you do the same thing on the other side. You know what I'm saying? You ask somebody who you know is conservative, who you know is going to vote a certain way. Why are you voting for this person? Like, what's the reasons that you're doing it? And then from that information, you can kind of do your own research and kind of get a bird's eye view and enough information from people that you trust, sources that you trust to make an educated decision as opposed to just seeing posts from people and not really delving into any further details into, like, the due diligence of why are they saying what they're saying. So I think whether you're talking about elections or whether you're talking about a man's innocence, there's a lot of things that you can look at in terms of not just taking one person's view or one person's opinion and using it as gospel. However, in this situation where Sean King was able to get all these petitions and rally up a group of people to at least be an influencing factor in delaying this man being put to death, I think there are a lot of positives that come out of just that example of what you can say is unity. And now it's getting a little bit more muddied up because of this recent situation, people kind of attacking it. But I wanted you to say a few words about that aspect of this, if that makes sense.
You know, it showcases how powerful we are, that we can do anything. And it wasn't just black people that signed it. I seen white women, celebrities, Mexicans, you know, Asian, all kind of different people of different backgrounds, because based on the evidence as they was presented, they seen something that was an injustice, and people do want to be good and want to rally behind something good. I think that as much as we rally behind things that are terrible like this, we have to be proactive in rallying behind or being proactive in things before they get to this level. Like, let's not just rally when it's a black man on death row for rape of a white woman and it's 30 days out for a stay of execution. Let's do it for the average black man and woman that we walk past that has a dream, that has a goal, that has an idea for our own family members and peers, because if it shows us that we can get this much power behind something, then it shows you that we can truly do anything. But the question becomes, how do we rally behind proactive issues? You know what I mean? Instead of always being reactive. Because a lot of times it's too late when we want to come together. It's usually when someone's dying or someone's on death row. You know, like, that's a lot. Dramatic. Yeah, so, and then we got to stop making it a man versus woman issue all the time, man. Like, that divisiveness of energy is going to keep America and the people in balance forever. Like, it's not a masculine versus feminine. These are two energies that coexist and work side by side each other. It's not feminist versus man, and the future ain't female. The future is male and females working together. That's the only balance. So I believe that proactive behavior. You know what I'm talking about? Looking at things that are not on their last leg and saying that how can we mobilize on these things? And I believe ownership groups. I believe 2020 being a year of wealth, we need to figure out how we can create lateral infrastructures, give each other access, and collaborate with each other at all levels to say, you know what, nothing bad has happened at all, but we should come together and do something good. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And right now, you can look in your phone book and contact 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 people and figure out how y'all can come together for ownership groups and figure out land acquisition. Maybe one person knows how to do it. The rest of you may just have the funding behind it. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's the type of proactive that we need. You know what I mean? Whatever you know, teach me how to do it so we can do more. And we don't lose by empowering each other. We win by that way. We got this sense of that things are not in abundance in our society, you know what I mean? A sense of scarcity, which is built by fear. And that's how we want to lock each other out of everything instead of giving each other access and being like, damn, no, the more power you got, you know what I mean? The more power we can lend each other. So Sean King showcased an example and continues to showcase an example of how to galvanize people together and galvanize their energy and galvanize their sense of wanting to do good and morality and get people to channel their energy and make change. So now we got to do it when it's time for us to own buildings and it's time for us to own NFL teams and things of that nature. Like, there should be a team owned by the people. That'd be dope, you know what I'm saying, where people can get stocks in the team or something of that nature.
Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, we got to change the game and change the narrative, man, and stop doing it when it's just criminality or death or some egregious shit like back behind it. We got to do it proactively. Get behind the leaders in our culture. Put as much energy and power and resources behind them and watch things change. I promise you. Get behind the leaders. You know what I mean? If you don't want to be the one that's champion for all these causes, I get it. Nobody got time to be doing all of that. Some people find purpose in their life doing it. So get behind them every single second that you can.
That's real. Before we wrap up and close out, Penn, do you have anything you wanted to specifically ask or anything to hit on? No, I basically hit most of the topics that I wanted to. And I feel like the 2020 vision of ownership is real. Like, I feel like it's funny because I was having a conversation with an old college classmate, and he was telling me about his struggles of basically, like, you know, working as a tech professional in Silicon Valley and working at this white-owned company with a bunch of white employees and being a minority, which is something I'm very familiar with because I've been in those shoes on an accounting side. And he was saying about how he had this, like, affinity group trip where it basically took him out, flew him out to, I don't know, New York or something with a bunch of other employees that were African-American throughout the company. Throughout, you know, the different states and whatnot. And they have these, like, affinity groups, and they get together, and they have these leadership conferences and talk about how to go about things in the office and how to better do X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me about how when he came back to, you know, work on the first Monday he got back, because some of his coworkers were asking him, like, oh, what was that trip that you went on? Like, what did you do? How was that? How'd that experience go? And he felt like it was very difficult to talk to his coworkers about, like, what did you do? Because, like, he didn't want to say, he didn't want to say, like, I just went on this black, vacation trip. And we just, like, he felt like his coworkers wouldn't understand. And it was very frustrating for him to deal with. And the most, you know, friendly, uncontroversial way that I could say to him, I told him, I was like, I hear everything you're saying, and I've been in those shoes, I've been in that situation, but the best way to avoid that situation completely is to work for a company that is owned by somebody who looks like you. You know, like, that's the only way to fully get away work for yourself. Like, that's the only way to, like, really completely eradicate a situation like that where you would feel uncomfortable in that situation and all those sort of things.
It's always going to be those times when you're working and then you might be with a coworker that's of your same color. Mm-hmm. And then y'all going to always have that insider, other than your white employees that you work with, you know what I mean? It's always going to be like that.
Right.
It's the same way, too, as of when I'm in the shop and I got white clients and I got black clients. I listen to the music and I hear it, and I do be trying to see, like, oh, is they going to say this? And I be, you feel me, trying to peep it out. And it's just a different demeanor, too, of how I get down, too. I could say I'm more uptight when some white people come in. Not to say that, like, oh, I could be chill and relaxed with black people, but It's just a different creed. It's just, you never know, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And it's natural. Vibe. I mean, a lot of those things are natural. It's not about, like...
And it don't be on purpose. Yeah, and I find myself having to calm down, like, you know, be cool, because they cool, too, you feel me? And 9 times out of 10, a lot of the white people that come to my shop be really cool, you know what I mean? But just off the bat, when they come in, just tighten up. Everybody do those. The people sitting in the shop, they just be looking like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it happens on the flip side, too. And it's, you know, a lot of the things when we... I always say, like, you know, from my vantage point and my perspective, a lot of racism isn't rooted in malice and negativity. It's rooted a lot of times in people... I've had a lot of experience when you go to a bar and, you know, a white person will be at the bar with you and say something like, so do you see that last Lakers game? Or do you, like, you know, just instantly like, I don't even, what if I don't even watch basketball? What do you mean? It's not about I'm trying to be negative to you. And like, it's about like, oh, I see you.
But what if
I'm
trying a real Lakers fan?
Exactly. Right.
You got a Lakers hat on.
I know, right? Exactly. But nah, it wouldn't be that side of BA. Warriors, Niners, all day. But nah, like, it's a lot of those scenarios where you people are making assumptions because they want to be comfortable with you. Yeah. They want to ingratiate themselves with you. So they're making assumptions on what you are, who you are, what you're about when they don't even know you. And that's what a lot of what racism is, like that casual racism where there's, disagreements and a lot of things escalate from that. And it's coming out of not necessarily a malice energy, but it's from an energy of I'm actually trying to be cool with you, so to speak. You know what I mean? So
right, but the connecting factors, you can't be on some bullshit. Yeah, man.
No, I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying that's what it comes from.
But it got to be an assumption of greatness, though. You know what I mean? If a person going to make an assumption about me, it got to be something great. It ain't going to be, are you a rapper? No, you have to be willing to, for your own enlightenment, step out and learn more about black people if you don't want to be seen or deemed as racist like other white people.
No, I agree with you. I totally agree with that point. But I think a lot of times when they're coming with that energy of trying to ingratiate you for a false narrative or something that you're not assuming is the greatest, they don't have it with the energy of like, I'm being like, you know, malice or negative towards you. It's with the energy of I'm trying to be cool with you, not understanding that this is a you're what you're saying is ignorant. What you're saying is completely, you know, factually like wrong, you know. So I think a lot of times,
but that's
like
a privilege to be able to do
it
that.
Is.
Yeah,
it
I had a neighbor like that. She was like, I don't know why doesn't the community accept me? I said, see, you got, that's your problem right there. Mm-hmm. We don't need to accept you. You just gonna be here. You're gonna be accepted. You too worried about being accepted. Then who is the community? Because Mexicans live right here, blacks, whites, Chinese people, everybody live right here. But you stay worried about, like, black people.
Probably nobody fucks with you anyway.
You feel me? Don't nobody fucks with you.
White, black, brown. Shit.
Sometimes we go too complicated.
So you want us to take the scraps. Look, black people going to be cool, white people, it's the affluent ones with some power and stuff. We don't want the scraps that even white people not cool with you. You know what I mean? And they be trying to come over here to get some exception. Nah. I want, like, bring the
top of the top.
Yeah, the top of the top. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm going to be partners with Brad Pitt or something. You know what I'm saying? It ain't going to be the regular, the Joe Schmo. You know what I'm talking about? There's somebody with some power I kick it with. You know what I'm saying?
Off top. Well, hey, whether we kicking it with somebody or we starting something up, 2020 year of ownership. You heard it from 19 Keys.
Yes, own it, man.
Yeah, man.
Ownership and slave ship, man. You got to get on one of the ships. Tap in.
Y'all been tuning in to Trap Talk. You already know what it is on Trap Art TV. Make sure you tap in with us and tune in by following at Trap X Art. You can follow 19 Keys at 19_Keys, KEYS. You already know what it is. Like I said, Tattoo Panda, BMG.
Yes,
hey, we appreciate y'all, man. Cheers.
This is Trap Talk on Trap Art TV.
And probably nobody fucks with you anyway. Be on some bullshit.
Cause Mexicans live right here, blacks, whites, Chinese people, everybody live right here. But you stay worried about like black people.
And I just be like, shut up.
Ain't no more like before. It's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get a job. Ain't none of that. I'm about to go to the fuck.
Don't go there.
Whoa.
That's what I'm saying.
Niggas backing out the cemetery. Wild.
As a diehard Niners fan,
you gonna travel with a man. Travel with a man that's willing to protect you and die for you.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be partners with Brad Pitt or something. You know what I'm saying?
Understand why the person at the bottom can't understand why you're making moves at the top.
It ain't gonna be the regular, the Joe Schmo. You know what I'm talking about? There's somebody with some power I kick it with.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.